Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello, Jack. Welcome to Rule the Roost podcast, mate. How are you doing?
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, I'm good.
No, I appreciate you coming on, mate. I appreciate you coming on. This is The Athletic's Jack Pitbrook. For anybody that doesn't know, also of View from the Lane podcast, I guess I'll give you a nice easy one first up, mate. Four losses on the bounce for Tottenham Hotspur. I know we can look at the season overall as being a good thing. Spurs have finished fifth. Not a lot of people thought Spurs would finish in these type of places come the start of the season. However, there is a worrying trend. We're seemingly getting battered week in, week out. Has Ange Postecoglou been found out? Will Spurs stick with him? All of those things, you know, that people are saying right now.
I don't think he's been found out because I think the football has worked well over the course of the season in general. And, you know, he's won. He's done pretty well even against big teams. So I don't think he's been found out. I think clearly they're not playing well at the moment. And I think a lot of that rests on the players. I mean, I think for whatever combination of reasons, the players look quite checked out over the last few weeks. Maybe that's to do with thinking that they couldn't get fourth, or maybe normally you'd say fatigue, but you can't really say fatigue at this point because they're having a 41-game season. Like they've got, you know, they're playing, 17 games fewer than Aston Villa this season. So the players got no excuse to be tired, really. But for whatever reason, the players have really gone off the boil. I certainly think there's a lot of questions that Postecoglou has to face over the summer going into next season. Set pieces is one of them, but it's not the only one. Like they have to do, you know, I think there's no excuse really for their how bad they are on defensive set pieces at the moment. And in terms of will they stick with him, which is obviously like the big question, I've got no reason at the moment to believe that they won't. Like I've not heard anything at all to indicate that Tottenham are sort of prevaricating in their backing for Ange. I think they absolutely have to back him. Like, it would be madness. If they don't back him now, there's no point in him being the manager, really. Like, they have to go and get... they have to get rid of the players he wants to get rid of. They have to bring in the players that he wants to get in if they're going to have any chance of this working in the medium term. But as far as I know, I've got no suggestion that that is not what they're going to try and do this summer.
Well, I mean, what's the mood like when you've been, you know, speaking to players or speaking to anybody involved with the club? I don't know if you saw Jermaine Defoe. I think he was on Sky Sports last night or the night before. And I know he works. I'm pretty sure he works around the club, doesn't he? Still works with some of the youth teams. And he seemed to say, the mood's great. Everybody kind of loves Ange. Everybody's on board with this. We've had a good season. And is that the feeling you get from the club?
Yes. Yes, it is. Like normally... I've had a few people saying on Twitter, like, this is like the end of Poch, this is like the end of Jose or Conte, and it doesn't feel like that to me at all, even though they're not playing well. Because at that point, like, it was, you know, it was no secret that the players weren't enjoying it. The players didn't like the manager, they didn't like the coaching, they were having a bad time every time they went in. And that is not, as far as I'm aware, that is not the case at all at the moment. Everything that I've heard suggests that the players do like... They like Ange, they like the coaching, they support the ideas. So I really don't think this is like a sort of, you know, a manager about to get sacked feel at all. It doesn't have that vibe to me whatsoever. So I do think things are pretty positive at the moment internally. I just think that they need the season to finish, basically. Like they look like they've got nothing left in the tank now. I don't really know why that is, but that's how it looks. I think they just need to finish the season, draw a line under it, and then move on.
I wonder if there's anything we can take from, you know, Ange Postecoglou's methods, the intensity of his football that's causing this fatigue. But it is still quite worrying, isn't it, that Tottenham, having played, I think they'll have played as many games as Burnley this season, I think I'd seen, for them to be as fatigued and as kind of out on their feet as this is a bit worrying. And I suppose Ange Postecoglou has alluded to this, hasn't he, recently when he said that some of these players essentially aren't cut out for this, right?
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Because I think the training is very intense at Spurs, so it's not like, I don't think the players are kind of undercooked or anything, or not being pushed in training. It is, like, I am generally of the view that finishing fifth, given selling Kane and all the transitions and stuff, finishing fifth is fine. Like, from a Spurs point of view, I would have taken fifth at the start of the season. I think most people would have done. But at the same time, I also think it's fair to say, should they really be below Aston Villa?
Mm.
When Villa have had a season of Conference League football, which is basically akin to like almost half of a Premier League season. Like, Villa have played so many more games than Spurs. And like, I know that Emery's been there longer than Ange, and I know that Villa have spent money on some decent players in the market, but there is part of me that thinks Tottenham shouldn't actually be finishing below Villa this season. So I'm a little bit like torn on that point, I think.
Do you think because it's hard to say, isn't it? You're not in the minds of the players and stuff, but you can't help but feel that they look a bit checked out. And this is, I'll be upfront, like I do like Ange Postecoglou. I don't think he's above criticism. But I think I tend to side on most of the conversation that suggests he's in his first season, he's trying to change the mentality of the club, and we're playing more positive football. It doesn't feel like Conte, like you say, doesn't feel like the kind of death throes of Pochettino. I do get those. I get those emotional little twangs. I get those worries where I'm like, is this a bit Nuno sometimes? Like, is he maybe underestimating the strength of the Premier League? That's maybe my biggest fear about him at times. But for the most part, I like what he's about, and I like that he's a manager that I don't think he's made this point as well as he could have done when he's sort of saying, I don't care about Champions League, I don't care about the top four. I think, you know, he's kind of said that in the moment, meaning I want to win the Premier League. That's what I want to win. But I think when you're kind of in the business end of a season and you're saying, I don't care about getting into the Champions League, people are just going to run with that. It sends the wrong message. It's optics, isn't it, that we say. To my point, though, like, why does it feel like the players are checked out of this, do you think, Jack? Because it seems like everything should still be quite positive. And I know bad results are gonna rankle everybody, but it felt like Spurs were checked out when they were still within touching distance of qualifying for the Champions League. And as I've sort of spoken about with other Spurs fans on here, I know to a lot of Spurs fans, we've had a lot of fun in the Champions League. We've seen Spurs get to the final just a few years ago. It might not feel that new. It might not feel that fresh to us. So it doesn't really carry with it that same sting if we don't get into it every single year anymore. But for a lot of these players, I mean, I think about somebody like James Maddison, who's had one Champions League campaign in a decent career so far as a player who's supposed to be a top player. Why aren't like more of these lads like really, really fighting to get into the Champions League? Like you're seeing with Villa, with Newcastle last year, it felt like it meant so much to the players, where it wouldn't have really mattered what the messaging was from the manager. The players should have wanted to grab that for themselves. And it just feels strange to me that Spurs are in this place where we have a load of players that don't seem that asked. Is this about club culture, or, you know, who knows?
I don't know. I wish I had a better answer to that, but I don't know exactly. I completely see what you mean. And I do think it is a bit weird that the players have sort of dropped their performance level in the last month or two. I do, part of my theory on this, and I mentioned this on our podcast yesterday, is that like people fixate on Kane leaving and what a big loss Kane leaving on the pitch has been. But I also think a huge loss that they've had has been Lloris and Dier just in the dressing room. Like, Lloris and Dier have been the kind of dressing room glue for the last 10 years, basically. they're two like incredibly, like whatever you think about their performances in their last year or two at Tottenham, they're two incredibly like smart, conscientious, thoughtful people who were really, really good at bringing the other players with them and kind of liaising between the players and the management and so on. And if you take those two players out of there, there's not really a lot of kind of leadership left in the left, and Kane as well, who I think is slightly different, but there's not a lot of leadership left in the dressing room, I think. You know, there's obviously Sonny, who's got a huge burden to bear as ever. And then they, you know, they've got these two, appointed these two vice captains this year, Maddison and Romero. Maddison's not played well since his ankle injury. Romero has actually played, I think, played pretty well this season. But I just think they kind of, I don't know, I kind of feel, I sort of sense that maybe they are lacking some of that like experience in the dressing room to kind of corral the players and keep them going, because it does feel like they've, the kind of motivation from the players has slightly dropped in the last month. And it is weird, isn't it? Because you would think, well, they should want to be in the Champions League. And I don't really know why. I don't honestly know why they're not playing better to try and achieve that target. It's very odd.
Do you think this sort of latter season form, because I've seen some people saying, oh, he's going to go, Levy will get rid of Postecoglou and someone. I just, even Daniel Levy, I cannot see that happening. I can't see us. I think even if we lost every single game till the end of the season, I can't see us sacking him. I mean, maybe if we're losing 5-0 to Burnley, they might, you know, there might be a few questions asked, but I can't see Postecoglou going. My bigger fear is that it might affect how much we spend in summer, because I don't know from your perspective, but I would say Spurs need continued investment, right? We need a much bigger and stronger squad than we have right now. And I sort of, you know, I cast an envious eye over to, you know, up the road, if you like, and see Arsenal signing Declan Rice and Kai Havertz and that type of thing. But I don't think Spurs are really even in that place to be adding those type of top tier players into the squad. I think at the moment we do need these smart purchases, right? I mean, the problem is, I do want, say, 3-4 years down the line for us to try and clinch a title by adding a £100 million footballer, for example. But right now, I see that our priorities are needing bodies, aren't they? And does that seem to you like... Mm-hmm. Oh, go on, Jack. Go on, please. Tell me.
Well, I don't know. I'm sort of... I definitely think they need bodies in some positions. Like, I think they need a backup keeper who can kick. I think they need a backup right back.
Yeah.
Maybe a backup left back as well. But then I think there's two areas where they probably need... I think they need a very good and established number six who can actually defend a bit. I think Bissouma's been a disaster second half of the season, really. I've got real worries about Bentancur's form at the moment. So I think they do need an established number six, a kind of Rice... like more of a Rodri type player, because I know Rice has played a bit further forward for Arsenal recently. And I think they maybe need a proper centre forward as well. I don't know. I know that there's interest, put it like that, from Saudi Arabia and Richarlison. And if they sold Richarlison to Saudi Arabia, they could more than make their money back. And there is part of me that thinks maybe they should, if they could do that, maybe they could go into the market and get a kind of high-end number nine. Because I'm still, I don't know, I still feel like they're probably one goal scorer short, as well as being a defensive midfielder short.
Is a funny one, Richarlison, isn't he? Because it feels like he's kind of coming good, but still not sure enough. I mean, I think I fall on the side of the fence that if we were offered essentially what we paid for him, which is about £65 million, isn't it? I'd be quite tempted to take it and roll the dice again, go for somebody else, because I do think he's decent. I think he adds a sort of combative element to our play in the final third, but I'm still not convinced he's actually that good, especially for a team that has designs on winning the Premier League. I mean, that's the lens that we're looking at Spurs through right now, and I know it's something that Arsenal and Chelsea fans and everyone like to have a good laugh at, but that seems to be the sort of the appetite at Spurs, doesn't it? I wanted to ask you actually, like, how How can Ange Postecoglou really win this next game against Manchester City, in the respect that if we do win, we, in a narrative sense, we are handing Arsenal, we're at least putting one hand on the title for Arsenal, really, at that point. And if he loses it, it's you know, five losses on the bounce. And I know Ange Postecoglou will try and deal with this in the way of saying, you know, I'm a professional, I'm a manager, I know this stuff's important to the fans, but I want to win. But surely he and the club and the players can't be blind to the fact of how much this fixture means for the fans and for the club. We're talking about Arsenal winning the league as a result of Spurs winning this game, you know?
So my view on this is that the more that people say to Ange and the players in the build-up to this game, you don't really want to win, do you? You don't want to see Arsenal win the league. I think that will actually intensify Tottenham's motivation to win the game. Just because, and I know, you know, I know it's not just down to how much Tottenham want to win, but I think it will, like, you know what, footballers and managers alike, like, they've all got big egos and they hate the suggestion, like, they've got, their ego is, like, wrapped up in competitiveness, basically. And I think the like, nothing offends them more than the suggestion that they might not want to win, they might not be trying. So I can see, and maybe this is wrong, and maybe City will just steamroll them and it'll be relevant, but there is part of me that thinks that all this stuff going into the game will actually make Tottenham produce a really, really high-quality performance and just make them really, like, desperate to go and show to prove that they're not going to get pushed over, even though, obviously, like, you know, this potential outcome of helping Arsenal to win the league is there, which, frankly, I don't think the players will care about half as much as the fans do.
We've actually got Burnley first, don't we? I keep forgetting that one snuck in there.
I'm sure they'll win that game. Like, Burnley are pretty washed.
Yeah, I would hope so. But, I mean... It is tough, isn't it? It's tough because you can't say to a group of players, "Don't win this one. Don't win it," because the fans are going to get bantered. But I mean, the chance is that could be Ange Postecoglou's Tottenham legacy is the guy that won the title for Arsenal. And I know it's obviously not as straightforward as that, Jack. Like, I know Arsenal have been brilliant. They've been building a squad for 4 or 5 years now. They've been playing brilliantly all season. It's not all just about this fixture, but you also know football doesn't work that way, does it? At least the way people talk about it. And I don't know. It is a concern. I mean, what do you think about, like, Ange, mate? What do you think about his headspace on all this? Because we saw him doing this pointing head thing at the crowd at the away end, which seemed quite a bizarre move for a guy who's kind of reserved, right? He's a somewhat, which seems funny to say in such an extroverted position, profession, he seems like quite an introverted guy in some respects. That's the sort of the element I get from him. Do you think he is, for the first time, feeling this? Have you noticed a change in him at all?
Yeah, I think he's. I think I have noticed a change in him. You can see, like, I can't remember. It was either the Chelsea or the Liverpool game where he did his interview with Sky, and I think he was asked, like, an incredibly innocent question, like, "What do you think went wrong today?" And he said, which, you know, standard question after any game, and he said something like, "I'm not going to write you a dossier, mate," or something like that. Yeah, and you know, you can just tell that he's. He's probably a bit frustrated, to put it mildly, about how the last few weeks have gone. And you're right. I mean, like, I also agree with you that he is very reserved. Like, he doesn't do small talk at all. Like, he's very, he is quite introverted, I think. But he's also capable of these great moments of performance. That's, like, the interesting thing about him. Like, you can see, if you can watch clips online of, like, when he was Socceroos manager and he's doing these incredible team talks, which I think he still does. Like, he's, you know, these... I know that people at Tottenham rave about his team talks, or, you know, the speech that he did on the pitch at Celtic Park after they won, I think it was their first domestic title under him. And, you know, he had, like, the whole crowd cheering and everything. So he is capable of these moments of performance, but at the same time, I think he is quite... he's quite withdrawn. He's not like somebody who could like work a room. So yeah, I think he is probably feeling the heat a bit. He's always been quite chippy, like even in his press conferences, which are great fun. He can be like a very, very impressive talker, and he has really interesting answers for everything, but he can get really arsey sometimes. Like we've seen, you know, these clips circulate on Twitter generally after one of these incidents where he'll, you know, take exception with a question or like have a little bit of a pop back at a question or something. So he's always had that in his makeup. Some people, I actually don't mind it. Some people think it's a bit rude. I quite like the way that he conducts himself in those settings. But yeah.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I basically agree with you that he is probably starting to get a little bit antsy about the way things are heading. But I think that fundamentally, like I said, as long as I think a lot of the fans are on side, as long as the club stays on side, people will forget all this by the start of next season, I think.
Have you been on the receiving end of anything from him at all, Jack? Have you kept in his good books?
No, I haven't. I think it's because I ask brilliant questions. So there's no, I think it's, I don't know, I think sometimes he can get a little bit sort of, I mean, defense, maybe, I don't know if defense is the right word, but he's like very on it. He's very aware that if he thinks a journalist is trying to catch them out, for example, then he'll reject the premise of the question, for example, or he will, if he thinks that there's like a trick in that, as in if a journalist asks a question along the lines of like, would you say that X is better than Y or whatever? Would you agree with this statement so that I could, you know, it can be a headline to my piece or whatever, then I think it's in those situations he gets a little bit like on edge, basically, and that's when he'll push back. Whereas if you just ask him, but if you do ask him a question along the lines of like, what do you think about X or why do you try and do Y or whatever, he will give you like a really good answer. And that's great because like a lot of managers don't do that. Like a lot of managers don't talk about their methods or talk about their thinking or go into details about, you know, how they work or what their plans on the pitch or whatever, whereas Ange is really, really good when he wants to be, but if he thinks that someone's trying to mug him off, then he can get quite defensive.
There's been two games in a row now, I think it is, where James Maddison's been dropped to the bench, which has sort of had a lot of Twitter at least speculating they've had a falling out and all this type of thing. I've taken it more that Maddison's maybe not fully fit or not as fit as you sort of think he is.
Yeah, I'm not aware at all of any falling out between the two of them. I just don't think he's just not really looked himself. I mean, he scored like a goal at Villa Park where he ran onto the end of Sarr's cross. And at that point, I thought he looked like he was back. Mm. And, you know, he was really putting in a lot of legwork at that point. But since then, he's just, he's not really got back to the Maddison in the first sort of, basically up to the Chelsea at home game in November, which is a shame really because he was amazing in those first 2 months. And also like he was completely integral to how Tottenham played. Like even from his debut at Brentford, from minute one, like everything that Tottenham did was going through him. So they're clearly very dependent on him and they struggled to move the ball forward or create chances without him. So yeah, they absolutely need to get him back on, but back to his best for next season.
Do you think, can you see there being any big casualties, if you like, this summer? Do you think there'll be anything that will surprise people? Because he's alluded to, he hasn't used the exact term painful rebuild as Pochettino did, but he's essentially alluded to that type of thing.
Yeah, so there was a line in his press conference last Friday where he said something like, he was talking about how he's going to have to sell players, and he said something to the lines of, like, some of the sales will be obvious, but some of the sales I'll be thinking, ah, oh, there's a good player there. And what I took that to mean was, it's not just going to be, like, with all due respect, it's not just going to be Emerson, Lo Celso, Sessegnon, Ndombele, who are sold. Like, it's going to be guys who played a lot of first-team football this season who are sold. You know, I mean, I'd probably put Skip and Højbjerg into that first category as well. So I think some players who have played a lot of football this season will be under threat. I understand that Spurs are not looking to sell Bissouma and Bentancur as such, but I think there's a bit of a question mark next to Bissouma and Bentancur. Also, the thing about Bissouma and Bentancur is they're quite, you know, they will have value in the market in a way that some of these other players that Spurs want to shift won't do. So I can, personally, I can foresee a scenario in which they might look at Bissouma and Bentancur as sellable assets. I think Bissouma's gone really downhill since a good start. Mm. Bentancur's not really looked himself with the injuries. I adore Kulusevski, but there's a small part of me that thinks, might he be in the game this summer just because don't think he's like a fully natural fit in the way that Ange plays out on the right. He would be incredibly sellable if they chose to go into the marketplace with him. I'd hate to see him go, and I don't think he will, but I can kind of see that being a conversation internally.
No, I agree with you entirely on that. I've sort of said that on here before, that he's such a good player, and I really love him. I love Kulusevski, but he doesn't feel like he fits this system at all, because... And it's testament to his ability, because I think Postecoglou is trying his best to accommodate him. He's kind of playing him centrally. He has played him outright. Don't think we've seen him on the left at all, but I wouldn't really want to. And there is still something that Kulusevski brings to us. I think his strength and, I mean, just his stamina, his work rate is unbelievable. I think through that period of injuries, he really carried the team.
And he holds the ball up. If you give him the ball, he'll keep it for a few seconds. And if you've just got like Johnson out on the right, like Johnson's done pretty well at points this season. I like him, but because it's like when Johnson gets the ball, he just runs forward with it, and then he gets tackled, and the ball comes straight back. And you can't, like, if that keeps happening, particularly you've got Werner on the other side and he's doing exactly the same thing, then you can't maintain, like, the ball's coming back at you every single time. You can't maintain any pressure. You can't get back up the pitch or whatever. Like, you can't get back in your shape, which is so important if you're going to try and press. So, and I think Kulusevski's ability to hang on to the ball under pressure is vital, particularly for a team that doesn't have Harry Kane in. So it can't, you know, the ball's not going to stick to the centre forward either. I really like him. I really want him to succeed at Tottenham because I like watching him play. I think part of my concern is that, I think we all know that what Ange wants from his right winger, and that's basically, you know, down to the byline, whipping a cut back to the number nine or the winger from the other side. And then, like, when the guy on the left-hand side's got it and they cut the ball back in, then you attack the six-yard box to... that's Johnson's game, and it's not really Kulusevski's game. And that's why I've got this, you know, it's like slight anxiety about where exactly he fits.
How have you felt about Johnson, actually, while we're on him, mate? Because... I quite like him, and I think he is a young player. I'm starting to have, and I know people say you shouldn't let a player's price tag count against them, but I kind of feel for the amount of money we spent on him, his age, is he blocking a pathway to the first team for somebody in our youth? You know, an example I continue to use is Noni Madueke, who's now playing at Chelsea, who is a similar player who I'd be tempted to say looks a bit better than Johnson, maybe.
I think the problem with Johnson is that he played more than they intended him to play when they bought him. I think when they bought him, they would have, like, the plan would have been to bring him in slowly over the course of the season. But then, obviously, Perisic has a bad injury and never plays for Spurs again. Solomon's barely played all season. Madison gets injured, which means Kulusevski has to play in midfield. Richarlison's had injuries on and off, and all of a sudden, Johnson has to play, and he wound up playing like 13 or 14 games on the spin, quite early, like in that sort of first half of the season, which I don't think was ever really the plan. And I felt bad for him, actually, because he kept going out there every week and you could see his confidence kind of draining a bit, and you could see the fans getting a little bit anxious about him. I actually think his best spell of the season was when Ange took him out of the team and then used him as an impact sub, and he kept late win against Brighton, late win against Brentford, I think, or like a series of good performances around like Jan-Feb, generally off the bench rather than starting. And at that point, it looked like his confidence came back and he was better in front of goal and he was putting on chances for other people. So, I think it's, for a first season, I think he's done fine. I think he's done, he's done pretty well. I think there's a lot more to come from him next year. I'm not especially, I think he's one of the, because they've just bought him, he's actually one of the few players who I think will definitely be there next season, which is more than I can say for some people. He hasn't pulled up a lot of trees, but I'm kind of pretty happy with him overall.
What about Timo Werner? Do you think, have the club cooled on that at all, or do you think they'll still be? Because it feels like it was a surefire bet not long ago, and I can't tell if the mood's cooled on it a bit.
I haven't heard anything. I haven't personally heard anything to indicate they won't do it. I kind of assume that they will just buy him. I think he's been okay. I don't think he's an amazing player, but he does sort of, he really does fit the Ange plan. Like he does, I guess the only downside is you've got to accept that if a half chance falls to him, he's not going to score it. And even in the Newcastle, like the disastrous Newcastle game, which started this like dramatic decline, Werner had two okay half chances. And I think both at 0-0, or maybe one was at 1-0. And a different player in that position, like Son, for example, in that position, might have tucked one of those away. But I think people have got to accept that even if Werner stays and he can play pretty well and put on chances for other people, he's never really going to be like a 20-goal-a-season guy.
No. Oliver Skip came on and had a pretty remarkable cameo at sort of left wing back, I think, the other day against Liverpool. Could you see any world in which he starts Tottenham's next few games, or do you think he's going to stick with Emerson?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's difficult because I don't think either of them will be there next season, to be honest. I mean, maybe Skip will because of the homegrown thing.
Yeah.
Although there was a press conference recently where Alistair Gold asked Ange about Skip, and basically, like, the question was along the lines of, given the fact that Skip is homegrown, like, does that mean that he will in fact be staying next season? It wasn't worded quite like that, but that was the gist of it. And Andrew's answer basically made no attempt to say, oh yeah, we love Skippy, he'll definitely be here next year. So I don't know. I would probably just stick with Royale just because he's more experienced there, even though Skip was obviously better when he came in. I do think it's a bit, I don't really know why Skip has not really played so much over the second half of the season. I'm not like world's biggest Skip fan, but I think he's like a pretty good player. But then again, I think like the midfield has been a problem for the whole second half of the season, really. Like, I don't think normally you would expect that over the course of the season, the manager would get a bit clearer in terms of his sense of like what combinations work and who should be playing. And I actually think the opposite's happened. I think it's less clear now than it has ever been what the right balance is in midfield.
I guess I would just ask you, mate, because I've seen sort of Charlie saying not long ago, you know, if you flip the season on its head, this looks great for Spurs. And he does acknowledge in the tweet himself that that's obviously not how football works. And the trend is that Tottenham are losing games now at the tail end of the season. But have you been, are you impressed with Tottenham at all? Are you impressed with Postecoglou? Do you think Spurs are onto something good, or do you think it's just too hard to say at the moment?
Yes, I am impressed, I think. I think that at the start of the season, if you'd said they'd get fifth place and probably like low to mid-60s in points, I think people would say fine. At times, they played really good football, and at times they played really good football in big games. It's not like they haven't really been stat padding either. It's not like they've been beating Luton at home 6-0 or whatever, and that's given a skewed sense of how they do. So I have been pretty impressed. I think the way that they play can work. I think it needs a lot. It needs everything to go right. Basically, it's like a house of cards. Like, you can't Like, it needs everyone fit, everyone on form, everything. You need to totally dominate the opposition, because if you give the opposition an inch, then obviously you've got like a huge amount of space behind your back four and they'll kill you. So yeah, like I think I'm generally on the Ange optimistic side of the argument, probably less so than I was a few months ago. And I think it can work, but I definitely think they need more players in the summer. And I'm a little bit concerned that going from, like, next summer, they're going to have 8 Europa League group stage games, and doing a Premier League season with no European football is kind of, you know, you're kind of playing on easy mode a bit, because you're never flying back from Carabag on a Thursday night. And like, Spurs are going to have a lot of that next season. And I just kind of hope that they have the extra depth that allows them to do that, because I think otherwise, like, it's going to cost them, like, I don't know, 5 to 10 points in the Premier League.
Well, they're absolutely going to need that. And that is my biggest concern about this, is the massive, like, increase in games that there is going to be next season. It is a shame. I mean, for obvious reasons, it's a shame, but just in a practical sense and not on an emotional plane, it is annoying that we went out of the both cup competitions pretty early on, because we've not really had any kind of sense of how Postecoglou will go about juggling those games, right? The increase in fixtures.
No, yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, I think, look, they were unlucky to get Man City in the FA Cup. They didn't really ever get a foothold in that game. I was a bit frustrated with the League Cup exit of Fulham, just because they played a very rotated team. But equally, I did kind of accept the argument they had to, on the basis that Postecoglou had only been here a few weeks, and there were a bunch of players he'd not seen play. So when is he, you know, when else is he going to get a chance to see them? Perhaps it was unfortunate they didn't get like a really boring home tie against the lower team, who would have been easier to rotate against. But yeah, I'm not really. I think it's difficult, isn't it? Because if they've been in the Champions League next season, you have to go all in when you're in the Champions League, basically. And that would have tied out the players more. Whereas if you're in the Europa, then maybe we'll see more of the squad players and the youth and the younger players in Europe, particularly in that massive group stage, which I think has the capacity to be incredibly boring. Because if it becomes clear after a while which teams are going to go through and which aren't, there's going to be like a pointless extra. Like, who's going to care about the 7th and 8th group games and, you know, after Christmas? So yeah, I would have probably expected a bit of rotation, but like, you know, you can't rotate without depth.
I think the fact that the Champions League teams no longer drop down, teams like Spurs should really be looking at Europa League as a real viable trophy. Like, I think Spurs can go into that as one of the best teams in the tournament. I'm not saying they'll definitely show up and win it. I know there's some very good teams still in that competition, and sort of canny teams. You find that in European competition, right, don't you? The sort of teams that may not look that strong on paper. Sevilla's a prime example of that, who just win the Europa League year after year. But Spurs should be aiming for that. And I think one of my big fears about him is that he will prioritise the Premier League next season, and I don't want to say throw the other competitions, but as good as throw them.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that they, you know, like, but European football is so important to Tottenham financially. You know, they've got when your club is constructed in such a way that like stadium revenue is a big part of how you progress, you've got to be in Europe and ideally in the Champions League. And I think that means that I don't think that if you're a different club, I think that you can like go all in on trying to win in your European competition. It doesn't really matter if you come fourth. Like, for example, West Ham winning the Conference League, or I mean, I was going to say Villa, although Villa are in fact also going to finish fourth this year. But whereas I think with Spurs, I think there's always going to be, I know they haven't come fourth this year, but there's always going to be that kind of a bit of pressure, I think, and expectation to come fourth. So I think it will be, I think it'll be difficult for Ange to put all of his like resources into the Europa League basket rather than the Premier League basket next season.
So do you think, I mean, what, I guess just coming towards the end, mate, like, what do you think the expectation will be on Spurs, on Ange next season? Because We're all hoping that he is going to have significant money to spend in the summer, and with that will come a lot more pressure and a lot more expectation from the club, I'd imagine. Is there a kind of agreed roadmap, do you know, between Postecoglou and the club?
I don't know of an agreed roadmap. I think they'll have to get top four for a start. I think not getting top four this season was fine. If you come fifth this season, you kind of have to come top four next season. Maybe that's mitigated if they win a cup or reach a final, I'm not sure. So I think they'll have to improve in the league. I think it's going to be, I mean, we say this at the end of every year, don't we? We say, oh, it's going to be really tough next year because all these other teams are going to be, Man United will be good and Chelsea will be good. And it never, doesn't actually always seem to be the way. I mean, it's almost impossible to imagine Man United will be worse next year than they have been this year. Chelsea, I think, will be better next year than they have been this year. City and Arsenal will obviously be very good. Liverpool are a bit of an unknown quantity next season. So I think getting in top four will be... we haven't even mentioned Aston Villa or Newcastle. So I think getting in top four will be hard, but I also think they probably... I don't know what internal conversations they've had at Spurs, but from the outside, my view is that they do have to get top four next season.
Okay, Jack. Right, well, thanks very much for joining me today, mate.
My pleasure.
Yeah, hope to get you on soon. And is there anything you want to plug while you're here at all, mate?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Jack Pitbrook. You can read me in The Athletic, and you can hear me on our Tottenham podcast, The View from the Lane, which comes out twice a week, every week.
Thank you, Jack. Cheers, mate.
Cheers.
Step onto the legendary clay courts of Roland Garros, where the world's best players battle it out for a chance to win the French Open title. Tennis Channel Plus is your place to watch. Stream every court from your phone or smart TV, live in HD. Don't miss a moment with daily live coverage and match replays on demand, beginning Monday, May 20th. Be there for all the unforgettable moments. Stream now with Tennis Channel Plus.